I'm Lorraine Salazar, and this is Everyday Heroes. Today we're talking about the hefty topic of motherhood. Everybody has one, and yet it still seems to be a role that we know so little about on a mainstream level. My guest today is Alexis Cox. She is here to talk with us and give us some insight into motherhood, being a mother herself and yoga instructor. She'll share with us her story on what it means to be a mother, how that role has changed her life, and the launch of her new site, Radha Home Yoga, a site aimed at bringing short, sweet, and deep practices to the busy mom. Hi, Alexis. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hi.
I feel like in our society today, everyone has a mother, right? If we're here on this earth walking around, we have a mother. But I feel like we don't always talk about or fully understand the roles of motherhood and what that entails. And it still seems kind of like a taboo topic. Can you walk us through or give us just what your experience was in that moment, like when you came home, had your baby? What were the big surprises that you weren't expecting, or the things that we thought we were so prepared for that then we realized, hey, wait a second, maybe we're not?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of that. I think basically the entire job of motherhood is sort of not what we're expecting, or not something we could really prepare for. I did a home birth, but it was at a birthing center. So I still did have the sort of come home experience. And I birthed in the morning. So I had a whole day in front of me. And I, you know, really just spent most of the day in the bed nursing my child and getting up whenever he was asleep to go to the bathroom and eat.
Now you had
lots of food.
Right. And you had a home birth, so your midwife came to you, to your house.
Well, actually, like I said, I did at a birth center. So it was very close to my house. It was about 3 blocks away, and we did go somewhere and come back. So I did have that same experience, but it was within that day. So I didn't spend days at the birth center. It was only a couple hours later when I was back in my own house. And, you know, I called her a lot because I felt, you know, he was crying a lot. Maybe he has gas or he has, you know, I had questions. And I definitely felt, you know, that I could have used a team of other mothers or my mother or, you know, just, I wouldn't say my husband was the ideal person to be stuck there with me, but, you know, he was somewhat helpful.
Right.
But it would have been nice to have a team of mamas there.
Yes. And I think that is something that we don't readily have available in our culture right now, is having that team network, because it's a lot too to put onto your significant other or your husband when you're exhausted after labor, you know, sore, depending on the type of labor you had. So you're healing yourself and you're having to support this life that's completely depending on you. In those, you know, first few hours of life and first few days. And so it can be all very, very trying. Why do you think we are lacking in that way right now? Do you think we always have been?
Well, I think our original, you know, our ancestors had villages. They lived in communities with one another, and the family was part of the community, and the extended community was part of the family. So everyone you know, helped out a mother when she had a child. And nowadays we live in these nuclear families that are separated, and often we live, you know, with some distance between our own parents and certainly our, you know, our siblings or even close friends. You know, a lot of times once you get married and you start to move into the direction of having children or however that path looks for you, you move away from wherever you had established your group of friends. So there's not, you know, there's just not that community. There's not that village. And we say that statement all the time, it takes a village, but we don't have a village. And even more so now than it probably was 20 years ago, people are so obsessed with their phones or their TVs or their tablets or whatever's going on in their life that they, you know, barely even look up to acknowledge that there's another human in front of them, let alone help. So I think we are far from the village, and that was how people survived in the past.
And do you think that played a role in creating like strong, confident, compassionate people?
I think for sure that's part of it. From my research that I did, which was pretty extensive when I was pregnant, you know, a lot happens just from the moment the baby's born. There's a book, I'm trying to think of the name of right now, on the subject. Maybe I'll think of it later, but she talks about how it's called the continuum concept, and how we come into this world with a continuum that still predates where we are right now. Our biology has not been able to keep up with our current wave of, you know, hospital birth. And so just that basic separation that mamas and babies experience upon arrival into this world starts off a set of triggers that makes the child anxious. And it also makes the mother anxious, which is part of the problem, because then the mother doesn't feel confident in her mothering, especially nowadays. A lot of women are sort of taught that they're not good enough to deliver their babies. You know, they're taking too long, we have to induce, or they end up with an emergency C-section. And they're sort of given this thing where they should just be happy they have the baby and the baby's okay, and the hospital or the doctor's the hero and the mother was sort of somehow dysfunctional. And then she has this baby, you know, that she's had this separation from, when the first moment they're supposed to have is connection. And then both, you know, both baby and mommy feel anxious from the get-go. And then it kind of continues when you're not supported at home and you're tired and you feel like, gosh, I'm supposed to love this and be so connected and be so happy. And yet here I am, tired and sad and lonely. You know, it's a very lonely experience, those first few months of motherhood. You know, more often than not, your partner is away at work all day and you're alone with an infant, you know, and that's not easy. So
definitely. And why do you think that is? Like, how did we allow it to get to this level? You know, how did we get to this point? I feel like it's almost spiraled out of control.
It really has. And that's funny. I've asked that so many times, and I sometimes feel almost angry at, you know, our parents' generation or the generation before. Where does this go wrong? You know, how did you let this be? But I guess, you know, I have empathy for the fact that the women were probably kind of drowning in it.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe the loss of the village was a little bit lower. Like, we might be at the worst point of that right now, with people living far from their families. You know, there might have been more neighborliness before the technological age. So perhaps they did have more help. I don't know. Certainly they had less fears and less anxieties put on them, because now there's sort of this massive list of things you're supposed to do or not supposed to do. And so that kind of adds to, you know, women not feeling confident in their mothering. But I really don't know how we let it go this far. I guess my best answer is that women who do not have children are sort of raised in our society to think they're very equal to their male counterparts. And so we grow up like not really aware of the hard work mothers are doing, yet somehow coveting having a job and a career and a life and all these other things. And we might even look down on mothers who look like they're struggling or having a hard time. Or, you know, we all have this sort of judgment towards our moms for all the things they didn't do. And then, you know, it takes until you actually become a mother that you realize how hard it is and how all-consuming it is, and how there's literally no help, and society is totally not structured for women and children. So because we go through this sort of ignorance when we're younger, that I don't think is true in a lot of other countries. I think in especially perhaps poorer countries where the village still exists, a lot of those young girls are helping other women with kids. So they're really aware of how hard it is before they jump into that themselves. And you know, we're really not, because mothers are kept isolated. You're not to bring your child out to eat. You're not supposed to bring your kid to all these different places. Kids are a problem. They're annoying, you know. So you're supposed to get a nanny and stay home with them, or get a nanny if you want to go anywhere, or stay home with them. And so that's, you know, I think that's the unfortunate thing, is that people aren't used to kids, and kids aren't used to people, and they, you know, they behave like children, and people don't like that in our busy, get things done world. So I'm not really sure, you know, how it got to this point, but it's definitely, it's sad in many ways for everyone, not just for the children, not just for the mothers, but even for the adults. We don't get to interact with children.
I agree. Right. For the whole, the family unit as a whole. And it being also, you know, a somewhat new mom, I can totally relate. And do you think our society acknowledges motherhood as a job? Like as a
legitimate... Absolutely not. I mean, they really don't. I think we're starting to call attention to that in this last, you know, maybe just the year. I think people have been stepping up. You see more and more women breastfeeding in public situations. Mm-hmm. I'm a yoga teacher. I've taught classes with my baby on my breast. And I say, people say, oh, so it's good for your kid. I say, you know, it's good for the people in my class is actually who it's best for, because they need to see that this is a reality and that children are part of our world and not something to be kept over in the corner until they get older. And then we wonder why they weren't, you know, why they're not socialized well. So I think it benefits everybody. And I think we're starting to maybe call attention to it in this last, you know, year. I am also, beyond a yoga teacher, I'm also a Vedic astrologer. And it's very strong in the astrology right now, with the north node of the moon being in the sign of Cancer. Since last August, we've been really focusing on the mother and the woman. And we've seen that with the Me Too movement. And we've seen that with women stepping up in all areas of leadership. And even just you doing these interviews with women, we see it starting to take more center stage. So I think maybe our generation is kind of had enough.
I was going to say, at some point, it's got to bottom out, right? Or like hit a wall.
Right.
And it might be that's the age of right now. Of what's
right.
happening, because people maybe went through a time where they weren't so much talking about it. Maybe there was shame and embarrassment and other negative connotations attached to it. And now it's kind of like, whether that's attached to it or not, I got to say something and I got to express.
And I also help. Think that we're in a point in time where more people are working, more women are working after they have children too. So it's really like enough, you know, you just can't do everything. You cannot like literally do everything. So that's probably women having more of a voice by being in the workplace and more say by being bigger financial contributors, but also, you know, just the sheer reality. Because back when our parents were having kids, it was more often that there could be a one income home.
Sure.
And that's just less common now. So you're seeing that women, it's literally just not possible. And that's what I say that a lot. It's like, it's just literally not possible. You can't, it's not, we can't do it.
right. And do you think that's part of the problem, is we've been told that we should be able to do it? We should be able to do it all and it should be no problem. Or that being a mother isn't, you know, being a mother just isn't enough. You have to be this, this, and this as well.
Right. Exactly. I think that's a big issue that comes from that whole being raised in, you know, in a society that taught us we should have jobs, we should do all these other things, and then all of a sudden we become a mother and just totally shift that overnight. And for some of us, you know, we might have waited till we were a little bit older, so then we really established ourselves on career paths and having a life of our own, and then it's just like, swoop, come in, there's a baby that needs you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So it's intense.
Right. Yeah, and tell us about that. So, because I don't think people really get that. It's like, oh, you have a baby. How cute. How fun. It's great. And it is all those things. But there is this other side that there are no breaks. If you're sick, if you're hungry, if you have to go to the bathroom, like what happens?
You just push through.
You just deal with it. You bring the kid with you.
You just go. You go with it. I mean, if you're lucky, you know, your partner or whoever can maybe stay with you, you know, take a day off of work if you're really sick. I got food poisoning when Noah was, I think he was 3 or 4 months old. So thank goodness he wasn't, you know, it wasn't so early on. But my partner had to take off work for the day because I could, you know, barely do my duties of nursing. And then I had to kind of roll over and lay down or throw up or whatever. So it's, you just have to do it. You have to, somehow, that's the thing with motherhood, is that we don't really have a choice. You've got to do it, right? You have this kid and they have needs. And so we just, you know, we push through, wait to go to the bathroom, wait to eat. And we don't take care of ourselves.
Right. And I think that's also another big thing where, self-care, you know, it's very hard to still manage to do things to self-care about yourself when you're supporting this child and or other children. You know, people have several children and, you know, a spouse or partner. And so it's how do you continue to also sustain yourself in those times also, you know?
And it's, yeah, I mean, I know there's definitely a portion of society that has the financial situation where they can hire help or have help to hold space for them while they take care of themselves. And some of them end up, you know, almost not spending very much time with their children at all and maybe missing out on some of that connectivity. But mothers who really spend all their time with their children and don't, you know, really can't afford or can't justify work in exchange for childcare costs.
Sure.
You know, really sometimes don't. They really put themselves on the back burner. And it's been one of the impetus for me of creating this online program for yoga, because one of the things I noticed when I was blessed to be able to go back to work after my child was 3 months old.
Wow.
And I only taught two classes a week, so it was very minimal. But that hour and a half of teaching, even though I was working, was really uplifting for me. You know, it was energizing for me to be around adults and to do something I love and to have it be a space that I could hold and control and you know, have that little break. And so I, you know, I, where was I going with this? Oh, so one of the things I realized right away was how few mothers were actually in my classes.
Right.
I would see these mothers come to my Saturday class sometimes, and they would come for a couple weeks in a row or 3 weeks in a row. It'd be the time that their partner would watch the baby. But then there'd be family things they'd want to do, or something would happen. It would break their cycle and they wouldn't come back for months. No one would ever come to my weekday class. And I just felt, wow, this is, you know, we need to come up with childcare or something on site, because other mothers are not really getting to benefit from the yoga classes. It's really these, you know, people who are either younger or older, or a lot of times men who did have children would be in my classes, you know, but their wives would be at home with the baby. So I felt like it was important to figure out how to get my own practice back in check, and then also to share that with other women. So for me, that's been my inspiration, as mothers, to create this online yoga program, and for myself, because I have less time to show up to classes physically. This way I can do it on my own time, work on my own time, and also let women who are busy and really have to fit a practice or self-care into whatever time their child decides to take a nap, or whenever their child finally falls asleep at the end of the night, you know, they can't commit to a class at a certain time every week, because it costs $15 an hour for their babysitter, and then by the time they're done, it's a $45 yoga class. You know, that they just couldn't do that. It's not sustainable. So
tell us about your structure of classes that you're setting up, that you're going to be launching.
Well, the first program I'm doing is actually called a Lunar Sadhana, and it's something that I started to launch when I was about 4 or 5 months before I got pregnant. I started to launch this big online yoga program, and I was going to start with the Solar Sadhana, which is the sun salutation and just a morning practice to get you started. And then when I found out I was pregnant, I was just about to start the filming, and I decided it wasn't healthy for my body, for the baby, to do this solar practice. It didn't feel aligned for me. So I kind of put it on hold. And when I came back into doing my own practice when Noah was 3 months old, I found that nighttime was really when I had more time, because I'd wake up in the morning, I'd be starving from a night of nursing and being up with the baby all night, and he would have needs right away. And I just couldn't get into a morning practice, and I couldn't really get myself up, you know, at 5 a.m.
Right.
when the baby's waking up at 6 a.m. Like, it just wasn't happening for me. So I found that nighttime when he finally went to bed was kind of my time. It was like the night hours. And it worked for me too, because I was repairing my body from birth. So a more, more of a yin practice was helpful for me.
And can you quickly explain yin for people that just aren't too sure?
Of course.
Thank you.
Yin is it's actually a type of yoga that originates in China rather than India. So I've studied the sort of traditional yin practices, but I also incorporate restorative practices. And they tend to be longer holds, positions that are held for longer periods of time, and more relaxing positions. They're less about energizing your body or getting your blood flow going, and less activated and more trying to release the hold in your body and trying to allow yourself to relax in. Traditional yin is aiming for the connective tissue as opposed to the muscles well. So you tend to use props and things like this to help get into the practice. In the Indian tradition, there's Chandra Namaskar. There's moon salutations that are actually not too different from the sun salutations. So they have some more activation than the Chinese yin. And so the practice, the lunar sadhana, is going to be a combination of that Chandra Namaskar, that lunar sun salutation, and then long hold to wind you into a state for sleep.
Oh, nice.
And be able to get...
Sounds
nice
like a perfect postpartum.
Even if... even if it's only for, that hour before the baby wakes up.
Yes.
I also find that for women who have older children, a lot of times they have not gotten back into their practice, or they haven't ever been able to establish that self-care, even when their child is 7 or 10.
True.
So I think coming into it from a gentler perspective also can be more accessible. And the time of year that I'm going to be launching, October 26th, is also a time when we're coming to the very end of the darker period of time. So it's a more lunar energy. And then the next cycle will be, I'll do a solar sadhana. Sadhana means daily practice, by the way. So the goal is just to get people back into doing a practice.
Nice.
And the solar sadhana will start in the new year when people are more energized for that. But after I do these cycles with, fully supported with a community so that we have one another to talk to and relate to, weekly live sessions with me where we talk about other things. I love mythology and yoga philosophy, and really weaving in the deeper esoteric knowledge of these Indian practices, of these Vedic practices, with the asana itself, with the physical exercises. So I'm going to do weekly, live sessions with the group of women. And of course, it doesn't have to be mothers, but that's the aim. That's the who I'm tailoring it for.
I love that because it's we don't always, as you know, have a chance to connect with others outside of being a mom or having that identity as a mom. And so it's so nice to be able to connect with others on a level of that you're interested in, that you have your interests. So it's like, this is a subject that I really love, I'm passionate about, I'm interested in. It's so nice to have someone else to connect with that feels that way too. And it doesn't always have to be like aimed on being a mom and mom life, but you have some of your individualism too.
Right, exactly. And that's something, we're so busy with our lives as moms that even sometimes, I don't know if you've noticed this, but when I'm not with my child, I find myself, sitting next to somebody who has a kid or talking about my kid or somehow,
yes,
still being engaged in that identity. Mm-hmm. And that's beautiful. It's beautiful that we feel that connection with our children. But like you said, it's really important that we have other identity too, and something that's just for us. And that's really what this is about. It's something that's just for us. That, it is not for our child, except for in the fact that they will certainly be happy to have a more peaceful and, a mom who's had some time for herself.
Right.
But something that's really just about self-nurturing.
And I think positively, that will positively affect the child, too, because they'll sense that and they'll feel that. And how long are your sessions going to be about?
Well, that's going to be the part that's really specially tailored for the mamas. Okay. Because, you know, most of what I've done in the past and most of what's out there is really geared towards people who have a lot of time to spend on themselves. Because we really don't have as much time when we're moms, you know, I would like to focus on shorter practices, because I think if somebody looks at an hour and a half practice, it's like, oh, I'm just not going to ever have time for that. You know, that's
right.
Never really going to fit into my schedule. So I'm liking to keep all these practices to 30 minutes or less, and to have it broken down in a way where if you just feel like doing the yin portion of long holds, you can do that. Or if you feel like doing the whole practice, you can. Or if you just want to do the chandra salutation. So like breaks in it, so that you can, you know, do the chapters. You literally only have 5 minutes. But if you hopefully have 20 to 30 minutes, you can do the whole practice. So definitely keeping it in that smaller range so people can, and because, you know, that time when they go to sleep is not just the time to nurture ourselves. I mean, it hasn't been so far for a lot of women. It's the time you get that work done that you need to do, or it's the time you respond to all those emails, and it's the time you, you know,
so
maybe
true.
Eat dinner for
yeah.
newer moms.
The first time you sit down to eat a meal, exactly, in those first beginning months. That's so true.
So it's, you know, I definitely don't want to take up every, you know, all the time. The whole point is to make it short, sweet, and deep, and, you know, allow women to drop in really quick so that they are getting that full feeling. If you have a really deep practice, 5 minutes can give you so much.
Yes, like restoring
because
energy.
You learn to drop in for 5 minutes, and that's like, that's gold, you know. But if you're newer to the practice, that 5 minutes is really distractive. You're thinking, you know, you could do it for an hour and a half and spend the whole time with your mind elsewhere. So really trying to focus in your mind on your own can be hard. And having that support and having that, you know, that video and the structure and the sadhana, the way it's always worked in ancient India is that you do it with a group of people called the Sangha. That energy from everyone doing it helps to keep you going. So that's the goal, you know.
And you'll be launching that October 26th, you said?
October 26th, I'm pretty sure is the date I have.
That's great.
Set up. Of course, I chose it astrologically, so I made sure we had an exalted moon for our launch. And you can sign up now. I'm still in the works of getting the website launched and everything itself, but you can sign up on radhahomeyoga.com, R-A-D-H-A, home, H-O-M-E, .com, to be on a list to find out
Perfect.
When we do the launch, when we finally get the launch page going and all of that. So that's the way to stay connected. I'm also on Instagram and on Facebook. My Facebook profile is still Alexis Cox. On Instagram, I'm Radha Home Yoga. And I'm super excited about bringing these teachings to the mamas that need it so much.
I am too, because we do. And motherhood is not for the faint of heart. I'm just going to say it. You have to keep your endurance up, and you have to not, again, like I mentioned before, not only support this new life, but also make sure you're supporting yourself so you can support this little being that needs you and, you know, be eating healthy as you can, or, you know, getting rest where you can, or finding ways to give back to yourself, like, you know, continuing your yoga practice or meditation or workout, whatever it is. I think it's easy to lose yourself in the long nights and the, you know, not eating properly, and all those things can start to kind of bring you mentally and emotionally down. So, and if you get, again, if you don't have that group or village support, it can be tough. Okay. I hear him in the background.
You can hear Noah saying "Nana."
Yeah. Hi, Annie.
You know, I was just looking over the notes that you had sent me before, and one thing that we haven't actually touched on that you commented on that I really want to tie into this is the social media aspect and whether or not it's helping or hurting.
Yes. Is the tech age more isolating or not? I actually have that written down in front of me, and whatever else you would like to add about that, because
I'm very... Well, it's an interesting... to me, that's a really interesting point, because when I first had Noah, you know, there are those long nights, and feeling like you can be on, you know, Facebook or something like that is, it feels connective because no one's awake, you know, except maybe the other moms who are liking your posts. But right. it feels like a way of tapping into the world that you're sort of isolated from. Mm-hmm. But for, you know, beyond that short amount of time, and maybe even during that short amount of time, I think it also has this quality, and it does this to everyone, not just moms, but it gives you that, you know, other people's perfect life kind of thing, where you see all the mom, you know, you see other moms who look so perfect and happy, and they have their makeup on, and they're, you know, going to an outing to the beach, and you're lying there, you know, half asleep in frog pajamas, just kind of
totally with spit up all over you, or
and it you feel like, my goodness, she's got it together, you know. Or even if you see people with older children, you know, there's that sort of part where it isolates you in the sense that it makes you feel less than or not as,
yes,
not, you know, like maybe you're not doing it right, because of course everyone's showing their happiest moments, and I don't expect people to take pictures of themselves, you know, crashed in bed, not having slept in many days, but that quality of social media does isolate us, I think, in a lot of ways. And it also isolates us from having real connections, right? We don't pick up the phone and call a friend. We don't invite someone to come over because we have them on Facebook. So we feel like we're keeping up enough with one another without having that genuine in-person connection. And you wrote in your notes to me, you know, it's not the same as having someone actually physically there for you. Well, for sure, with a baby, no, right? You know, having somebody actually hold your baby would be much better than having them, you know, suck your time, that one little bit of time you had being on Facebook. So I think that's also one of my goals with this program, is that to give people something to do with their time. That, you know, while it's still going to be using the vehicle of the internet, it'll be perhaps a healthier way to spend that maybe 5 minutes, maybe 20 minutes that you get, instead of trolling Facebook and just liking each other's photos and feeling all that range of emotion that comes from, oh, I wish I could go do those kind of things I used to do, or, oh, that mom looks like she's more together than us.
It's so needed and so nice to have a group or a connection that you actually can be very, can be authentic with and raw and feel safe, you know, and like, okay, this is me. I'm showing up and I just want to be able to have my practice and, you know, feel like enough.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And
definitely for women who are just having babies, I highly recommend finding a group, an in-person group of people who have kids the same age, but you can really go through those first few months with other mamas, you know, because it's so hard. And
I know for you, it was, so you had like a career pre-baby, right? Like you had your life and career, right, as I did too. And I waited till I was, I would say older, you know, to have children. And how do you think that makes a difference at the age you are when you have children or choosing to have children? Does it matter if you're 25 versus 35?
I think it does. You know, my midwife said that the biggest difference is that the 25-year-olds just kind of fold it into their life and just go with it because they didn't already really have necessarily such a full life before.
Sure.
Whereas it's, you know, the older women are more likely to fall into that sort of depressive state because they've had all these years of being able to do whatever they wanted to do. You know, oh, you want to go to a yoga class, go to a yoga class. Oh, you want to take a trip to Peru, take a trip to Peru. And all of a sudden you can't do any of those things.
You want to take a nap, take a nap.
Yeah, take a nap. I know, you want to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, let's not get fancier.
Right.
So I think, yes, it does. But I also think that there's certain challenges of motherhood that are so great that I feel really grateful for being older and being more mature and being more educated, because it has allowed me to take a moment when I feel frustrated, when it's overwhelming, when I feel like, oh my goodness, I don't think I can handle this. I have more life experience to call upon that, you know, yes, I probably can handle this, or this moment will pass. Or I learned this technique in one of my many, you know, years of being able to do things that I wanted to do. Maybe I took some self-help class or something, or learned some nonviolent communication, or did something that sort of helped me operate a little better in the circumstance, because I guarantee the 25-year-old is also frustrated and overwhelmed.
Sure.
And maybe doesn't have that wealth of information to call upon. So I think it's, you know, I think it's, and often when you're older, you have a little bit more security and stuff like that too. So I think there's a lot of different elements that come into play, and it really probably depends on the individual person as far as if it's easier or harder. Some people are just more inclined towards motherhood, and others might have waited a long time because they weren't even sure if they really wanted to be a mother. So that might, you know, that might be a part of it. Or maybe they waited really long because they couldn't get pregnant, so then they really wanted that baby. I don't know.
Sure.
You know, there's just, everyone has such a different story that I think, you know, it's hard to say what's easier, but there are certainly challenges that come with it.
What was the most surprising thing in the beginning stages, let's say the first like 6 months, about motherhood that you were surprised by, that you weren't expecting?
I was surprised I didn't get my body to myself ever. You know, I mean, of course I breastfed, which not everyone does, but I was just shocked that literally my body was so much not my own.
Right.
You know, that I was like, I would never have been able to imagine not going to the bathroom when you want to, or not, you know, and the fact that it seems so ingrained in me. You know, my husband had no problem going to the bathroom, getting up, taking a shower, doing all the things he needed to do, and then offering to help. But for me, you know, there was no question that I had to take care of my child. And then if I got to take a shower, or if I got to go to the bathroom, or if I got to eat. So I never could have imagined, you know, and again, that sort of equalness that we're raised with to believe in our Western world, that we're so equal, it was shocking.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Cause you really see
it's
like
all on me, you know?
You see the truth,
like, wow,
play out.
Really...
Yeah. Yeah. Even in today's society where you think things are so different in so many ways, or like you said, that belief where it's been equal, and then you see in the reality, it's very different.
Very different.
How long did it take you to heal post delivery?
Physically? Yeah. I had a really easy birth in terms of, not needing stitches, and I healed really quickly. I was in great shape when I gave birth.
And it was
and
a natural birth?
Took me, I gave natural birth, no epidural, anything like that. But still many of the women who give natural birth, you know, have tearing and things like that occur. So I was just lucky.
Yes.
And I would say it still was easily 6 weeks of physical healing. You know, that's sort of the low end of when I would even start to feel remotely like myself again. So that would really surprise me. When I remember when 6 weeks hit, and I was like, wow, a lot of women would be going back to work right now. That's amazing. You know, like, that's just phenomenal that you would go back to work at that point, because you're still so much in this loopy state from lack of sleep, and your body's just, it's still repairing, even though it's, you know, might have healed on the exact wounds that you had. Your body is still coming back into itself, you know. I mean, it actually takes 3 years for your uterus to come back to it that it was in before. So, you know, I can't imagine it's good for women to rush back into their lives the way that they do and are encouraged to in our society.
Right, and I think that's another pressure, you know, of doing it all, or the expectation to do it all.
Yeah. It's and also, I mean, for a lot of women, it's just a very cold, hard reality of their working situation and their financial situation. They literally just don't have a choice, or they'll lose their job. My husband was told he would lose the job he had at the moment if he took more than a week off. So we just don't honor in our society, in America, really. In other countries, they do honor. But in America, it's really probably one of the least friendly countries to have a child in, because in other, you know, more well-off, I don't like to use the first world, third world words, but I'm not really sure that the best way to put it, but I think more economically affluent countries tend to have child care and tend to have long periods that the parents, both the mother and the father, get to
yes.
have parental leave. And then countries that maybe don't have as much economic affluence tend to have more of the village mentality still going on. They tend to still live close to each other and have that family support and network. So I would mark the United States of America as probably one of the absolute worst countries to have a child in and be a parent in. One of the least supportive, for sure, to that process, and where, you know, people really just think, well, you chose to do that. And yes, of course you chose to do it, but, you know, it's a choice that most people are going to biologically make.
Sure.
And at this point, most people might not be making the choice because they see that it's just not a friendly society towards that.
Right. I feel like there can also be a lot of judgment in our society just with, you know, you take your kid to the store and your child starts to cry, and then it's, you know, rather than, you know, offering help, you do have people that offer help, but more, you see more people kind of, you know, getting irritated that maybe there's a crying baby in the store, or, you know, I feel like this, our society isn't as compassionate or have as much empathy as maybe we could for mothers, especially when we see, like, you know, a one parent, like a mom with two or three kids in tow. And I, you know, it's, it just doesn't seem like it's a very, inclusive society when it comes to helping out. And,
absolutely,
you know, and that's kind of hard too. And that's like that was definitely a surprise for me when I became a mom, that just the lack of help in general or universally, you know.
Because our society is putting such a high focus on production and productivity and capitalism and money, you know, human reality gets more and more stuck to the side. So whether it's companies that, you know, do not have the best interest of the individual people in mind, or whether it's, you know, what you're just talking about, being in a store, everyone sort of has this I'm in it myself mentality, and it's isolating. You know, it's isolating for people to think that they have to do everything themselves, and that, you know, if someone judges you and thinks, oh, you shouldn't have had those kids, or you're in, you know, you have to make that happen on your own. They're also thinking that about themselves, right? They believe that they have to do everything on their own too. And maybe they didn't choose to have children because they thought they couldn't handle it. So it's sad. It's a sad reality that we're all living in, that we feel so alone and in turn judge others. But whenever we're judging others, it's usually a reflection of what we're telling ourselves, that we really expect a lot of ourselves in the society, and we expect to not receive any compassion or assistance. And we therefore don't offer the same to others, you know.
Did you have many people reach out to help you post delivery?
I was really lucky. I had moved, and I made a conscious choice to move to Hawaii before I got married and had a child, mm-hmm. because I had a feeling, you know, I saw my stepsister for one, and a couple friends of mine. I didn't have that many friends have kids yet when I left, because people do tend to wait in Los Angeles or in
bigger cities,
they're a little bit older.
For sure.
So I just had a couple friends, but I saw what they were going through, and I saw how much money they had to pay to go to this school or that school, you know, for their kid to learn things that they could learn in a community.
Yes.
I felt saddened by it, and it didn't look like it was a good road, or that it was going to be an easy road. So I chose to move out of, you know, the mainland and out of city life. And we did a decent job. We would have, you know, meal trains. When a woman would have a baby, there'd be people sign up and they'd bring food for the woman, which is so helpful.
So helpful. Yes.
You know, so helpful. But of course, everyone has a different capacity to, you know, to say what their needs are, or what their, you know, I've never been super good at asking for help. And especially if I do get help at all, I'll just take whatever I get. So I wasn't really good at specifying the food that I wanted and all this kind of thing. So I would say that it was helpful, but also at times it was draining, because then I end up just entertaining this person who comes to my house, or they just want to hold my baby, and maybe all they brought was some soup or a salad or something that's not really very nourishing to me. And in the end, it ended up being less helpful than it would have been if I had taken more control of that.
Yes.
As I'd seen other women doing. But I still think they probably, you know, even the women who really dictate what food they want, and really, you know, hold tight to the timeline of someone coming, probably still feel somewhat drained by all those different people coming over. And I think, you know, the main thing I noticed was that as much as our community tried really hard, yes, there, as much as our community tried really hard we weren't family. We weren't related.
Yes.
And I think that's the biggest difference between a true village and communities trying to be villages, is that when you're blood relatives, you don't have a choice. You're attached.
Right.
And you show up for each other, whether you like each other or not.
It's true. You're going to be there. Mm-hmm.
When you're not, you're not. And right now, my village is being, you know, is there's lava flowing and people have had to kind of scatter in different directions. And we're really supportive to each other using social networking.
So I basically, my point was just that without that family lineage, without that history of being with people in the same, you know, same town, same community with relatives and everything, it's really not going to be the same thing as, you know, when things come up, when disaster strikes, when you're really in need. The self-made community is going to have some differences and some drawbacks to a true village.
Right. You were recently evacuated because of the lava eruption. And how has that, on top of being a mother and on top of all the other duties that you have and that we all have, how has that been an extra hurdle for you? And that's another village that you had that's you don't probably have
as
much anymore,
yeah.
Physically.
Oh, it's been insane, to say the least, you know, just being without that sort of consistency of home life that you're used to and the setup. And my partner is on the island still, and I'm here with my child in California. And I do have a lot of friends here. You know, I did live here for many years, but most of them are either now parents themselves,
sure,
and very busy, or they're not parents and they're, you know, very busy with their single life. So it's also not, you know, there's not the nature we're used to and all the things that I chose to move to Hawaii for. So it's been a challenge for sure, but it's also a practice for me in self-care and in self-compassion, in that these sort of rigid rules we have or that we come up with about how the best way to raise your kid is, you know, kind of needs to be adjusted for your own life as well, and for the reality that we don't live in a vacuum. You know, we live in a real life, and things happen to people all the time. There's earthquakes and hurricanes and lava flows and things. And so we have to learn how to work in the real world with what is, you know.
And I love something you mentioned earlier. You would breastfeed your child when you were teaching. Sometimes that would just has to happen, right? And
absolutely.
Do you think it's a stronger choice to incorporate your child into that rather than, you know, have them go with the babysitter for those couple hours? Do you think it matters?
Well, for sure. You know, the thing is that's funny is that my husband and I actually used to do the classes together where he would play music and I would teach the class. And when we had the baby, we thought, oh, we'll just, you know, kind of have the baby there. It'll be totally fine. I'll sit with daddy and he'll, like, you know, chill. And then, of course, you know, babies don't do that.
Sure.
And so I found that it was very overwhelming for my husband to handle. He would not be able to play music, basically. If he watched the kid at all, then he would stress out and be over here and be over there. And he couldn't handle it all. So we did actually invite a friend to come babysit. And that worked great for a little while until she left the island for the summer and we had to get a different babysitter, and we just couldn't find one that was a good fit. So I just found it easier to hold him. Like, he was quieter when I would hold him. It was less of a distraction in the class for me to have my baby. And I think that's something else for people to be aware of. The more time you spend with your kid, the more your kid is integrated,
yes,
the more they actually are calm and able to go in a versatile amount of situations. Mm-hmm. People constantly tell me how calm my child is, and he is. You know, of course, I'm sure he comes to me that way in many ways. But I definitely believe that being worn so much, like being on me so much, was a big part of that, because mm-hmm. he just, you know, didn't always have to cry out for his needs to be met. So he, you know, would just, he's like, okay, whatever. She's teaching yoga class now. She's doing this now. She's doing that. But I'm with her, and that's really all that babies care about. You know, they don't really, they kind of actually, that's part of this, that continuum concept, that book I was talking about is about that they're actually geared to come into the world being attached to village people who hop around on like rough surfaces and experience all kinds of different harsh elements.
Right.
So they're actually, like, that's why they like to be bounced and stuff like that. This is this woman's theory, is that she spent all this time with these Indians who live very similar to the way, you know, everyone used to live or whatever. And that the constant motion of being walked everywhere, just living the life that they live in their village, is actually very calming to babies. They expect to see what you do every day. They expect to see that you're working and that you're making food somehow come on the table and that you're somehow going to the bathroom and that somehow you're showering or washing or bathing. And it's like, we live in such a world where we isolate our kids from experiencing anything about what we really do. And then they grow up and just, they really don't even know what we do because they've been in playland for so long, playing with toys with a nanny. They don't even know what life is. So it's an interesting concept for sure. Worth perusing when you're in that 9 months.
It is. I was going to say, I could revisit just that topic alone with you on another interview.
Yeah.
I mean, because that is so, I believe, true and such a great topic and something that's we have become so removed from as well, that I think, you know, we want to protect our children and keep our children safe. And of course we do. And that's so important. But I don't think at the expense of keeping them from the real life and what's really happening and shielding or protecting them, maybe it's actually taking away from their experience and coping skills and creating this, you know, this person who can be comfortable in real life situations. Another topic I could definitely bring you, would love to have you back on to discuss, is the father's role when it comes to parenting, because I think we many times have this idea in our head of what it's going to be like when we have children with our partner. And it doesn't always look like that or turn out that way. And it's interesting to see the difference in dynamics and why do men, you know, their lives can pretty much continue. And that's how we're, you know, I think a lot of how we're wired. But how much do we really talk about that? And even how much do they realize that before they have children?
Right. Well, I think that's, yeah, and that is a topic all in itself. But there,
yes,
that is, I think that ties into the part where, like, the single women or the women who don't yet have kids or maybe aren't ever going to have kids,
yeah,
kind of tie in with the men to keep that reality totally no one's thinking about. It's kind of like the Me Too movement where a lot of men are like, what? You know, like,
right,
we didn't realize. Like, it's mm-hmm. ignorance is bliss kind of mentality. And now a lot of men are stepping up and taking bigger roles in the childcare, primarily because mothers are taking a bigger role in the financial, you know, responsibilities. But I think one of the biggest differences there too is just how much easier that even is for men, because I've had so many guy friends who have kids tell me about the gold star they receive for simply being with their child. I mean, and I've seen it with my husband. I've seen it with so many men. Everybody just oohs and ahs over the man who spends 5 minutes with his kid. Does not matter if he's giving the kid ice cream, doesn't matter if he's on a phone, it does not matter what he's doing with that child. Whereas a mother, if she is doing anything that's even remotely considered bad by the viewer of that situation, she's immediately judged and condemned and sent to the stake. So it's a real double standard just even on type of parenting. So even as men step more into parenting, you still see them just, you know,
it's
able to really do it on their own terms and their own way and be fun about it and have a good time, whereas mothers are being, you know, crucified in every direction for how they're approaching the task that they have before them.
It's so interesting, the judgment that's placed, that's been, I feel, so interwoven throughout the centuries and generations, and is a generational thing. But yeah, it's just,
and we do it to ourselves. I mean, you know,
I see
right. women judging women more than anything. So it's not, you know, it's a generational thing that's been passed on.
It's just been passed on and passed on. It needs to stop. We have to stop passing that one on. We're about to wrap it up, but I have a couple more questions. What is the hardest thing about being a mother? And what is the best thing about being a mother and up until this far? I know you're just beginning your road.
I'm a 20-month-old, just for full disclosure. So there's a lot of women who probably know a lot more than me on the subject. The hardest thing about being a mother is literally just not you know, not being able to do the things you want to do or need to do in a given moment, you know, really having to put aside whatever it was you thought you had to do and find that patience to take care of your child's needs. And the best thing about being a mother is the sweet little kisses and cuddles and just this beautiful smile and laughter, just engaging when your child is you know, when things are great, you feel up and your child is so happy, and just that love, that deep connection and love that I don't think really exists in any other relation or plane. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I agree with you. That is so true. And he is such a little love bug. He really is. Thank you so much for being on the show and taking some time with us. I know it's hard. I know it's busy. It's always busy and it's always hard.
And he was so quiet this whole time. I didn't know what that was going to look like. I thought we might have a real life demonstration of how hard it really is.
Right. And no,
he really self-entertained.
He really is, though, just like so sweet and so calm and so gentle. And I really think that has a lot to do with how you've decided to raise him, right? Like just a part of your life, and he's incorporated and, yeah, he's a little sweetheart. So thank you so much. He was perfect. Come on the show again,
Noah.
Thank you, Lorraine.
So awesome to talk to you, and thanks for having me here.
Let's just give out your website name one more time, too, for everyone.
Oh, sure.
Because that's going to be coming up
soon.
Sure.
Yeah, it's Radha Home Yoga, Radha, Home, Home, yoga.com. And we'll be getting that together real soon, but for now you can still sign up with your email and find out when we launch our yoga sadhana series. It's going to be called Raja Yoga Mama, so look for that.
Great. So we can still go to that site and contact you, and it is live and working for that. And
it is.
That will launch October 26th. Thank you so much, Alexis, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Aloha.
Take care.
Bye-bye. You can be a hero.